On page 54, we're discussing Jack's point of signage. And a couple of times you treat it as though it should be treated the same as Millbrook. I take that from the way it's drafted as if it's a resort. I'm wondering if that is what you intend. Or because the results of the decisions on chapters 41, 42 and 43 is that Jack's Point is not a resort.
I treat them the same. Yeah, I was aware of that differentiation, I guess, but I treat them the same because I guess the notified chapter bunched them all together and applied the same standards to them. That was the only real rationale for treating them the same.
Do you think in the sense of the decisions version, where there's a distinction in terms of the visitor orientation and activity orientation of the resort versus Jack's Point, which is a suburb, requires a different approach? Or, I mean, if you're talking at the village activity at Jack's Point, is it the same as a resort village activity, or is it similar to a shopping centre? We had different opinions from Ms. Bovines, in terms of the village area of Jack's Point, considering it more akin to a local shopping centre zone.
I think that that's probably fair, because when the village emerges, it possibly will be more akin to the local shopping centre, whereas the established, existing Millbrook hub, commercial hub, which I believe is to be extended as well. Yeah, it definitely has a different character. It's got more of a resort feel. And so you would probably expect the signage in particular to be more muted, perhaps, for want of a better word. It doesn't, people come here as a destination, so they already know where they are. So the signage doesn't need to be as significant or.
On the last page of your evidence, you talk about the section 23 report. So you say it's the landowner's responsibility to get the appropriate consent. Is there a responsibility of the sign writer itself? In the same way that the person who chops down the tree is the person who has to be sure there's a consent before they chop it down.
I'm not sure about that, I'm sorry.
Well, there are local businesses that specialise in sign writing. They're the ones that really need to be aware of the provisions, aren't they?
Yeah, and it would be best practice for them to advise their customers. I don't know how that responsibility lies.
Here, roughly, this is Jack's Point again. In paragraph 3.5, we talked there about the landscape and vision amenity values in the village area of Jack's Point. Are they really that significant there?
I'm not thinking about it, I guess, as within the village area. It's more on the surrounds of the village activity area that I guess I'm more concerned about.
Do you mean the residential activity areas or the outer edge?
Yeah, the outer edge of the village activity area itself. Right.
I've got a few questions on details of the provisions. I don't know if you recall from the stage one hearings that you were involved in the efforts of the panel to ensure that objectives were objectives.
I don't remember.
I thought you might. Have you had a look at the objectives and policies in this chapter in the light of that experience? It certainly looks to me like certainly the first objective is actually a policy.
Yes,
and the second is. And the third is. Fourth is probably a policy.
Honest answer is no, I did not.
Mm.
I can.
That would be helpful. Looking at policy 31212, it says that the policy, at the very end, apply the nearest adjoining zone. Is apply the right word? Or is that phrase what it really meant? I think it's the sort of thing that is probably the ability, without changing the overall meaning of the policy, to make it less logical and understandable in the section in the clause 16.2.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably several other rules. Nature and taking a few to look at that in that sense.
Yeah.
If we go to 2 down, 2.1.4, I just wondered whether the wording will not is quite right, or whether or does not lead to those specifics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And 8 is another one where it says apply the relevant assessment matters, but in fact if you're avoiding or you're mitigating the adverse effects by applying them, there seems to be quite a few grammatical issues by that. In 31.2.1.11, wondered whether the location was relevant.
You mean in subclause A?
Well, no, overall, whether that's actually another. It's the effects of the signs relevant to the location rather than the location of the sign. I have difficult understanding. Is it meaning where you're putting it on the building? Or is it?
Just to clarify, you're talking more about location generally, not just in relation to the heritage item. There's a broader...
Well, it's unclear what was meant by that. You've got the design of the sign, the size of the sign, and the location, which implies where it is, but maybe it is also relevant to take part of Barrowtown, where the general area is an appropriate location to have a sign. And that wouldn't be picked up by the use of the term location there, for example.
No, yeah, I would take that to mean the location on the building or on the site, right. But then perhaps it might be addressed by the, with that example, the Arrowtown design guidelines.
There's also other policies as well which seek to ensure that signs are located so as to manage character and amenity values more broadly.
Well, that may be the answer.
And also just a consideration in that regard is that the location itself may be the heritage item. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a location at the site or the building, it's the location within the location. That makes sense.
Yeah. Going to 31.2.3.4. Seems to apply to shop fronts, windows. I can't understand how shop fronts, windows can be promoting passive surveillance for streets, given that generally they're boxes of displays, but not. People don't sit on the other side of them looking out. I'm wondering whether that the meaning of that is that you can't actually have a sort of closed display area in a window. Thinking of Paper Plus Store and Monica, which all the windows closed off displays. That would be contrary to this policy, which seems strange for a town centre anyway.
Displays are very important within streetscape, but if there isn't a display, so for example a cell phone shop, that interaction with the, or being able to see out to the street, or when you're going in towards, this is something I'm always interested in, is when I go towards a shop, can I see what's in that shop before I walk through the doors?
Yes, but is that passive surveillance? I don't think it is.
No.
Passive surveillance is one of those crime prevention by design criteria things that some of us old painters are wondering if it's ever done anything.
Yeah, it's a good question. I can think about that some more. Perhaps not passive surveillance, but perhaps it's about that interaction.
Interaction.
Yeah. Yes, interaction is different, though. Mm-hmm. And, Policy 31252. I wondered if that policy, to what end? With regard to those things, but for what purpose? And it may be that when you've rewritten the objective, you'll find some of the parts of the objective should be in that policy. Moving on to the clarification area. one of the questions I had was whether signs on roads were subject to these rules.
Signs on roads? Yes. Is that
actually on the... Within the liberal road. Because they're not signed. So they're not picked up by any of the zoning provisions.
Yes, so there's definitely a rule in here, 31.5.23, about signs on or above roads, which is what that...
31.5.23.
Yes, sir.
That might require some clarification that other signs are not provided for. Because the exclusion is 31.5.1, I suppose it technically packs it up, but it doesn't spring out of me as applying on those.
Sandwich board signs, for example,
which are
on roads.
Yes.
They would be covered.
It's a freestanding sign located above a footpath.
Yes. So there are various of the permitted activities that would be permitted on or above roads. But any that aren't would be discretionary activity.
Yeah, that's right. So using your example of the sandwich board signs, there's definitely not the intention to permit those on the footpath, and they would follow the discretionary path under 31.5.1.
So they must be wholly located within the site where the goods and services are available, which means that the standard doesn't allow them to be on roads, and therefore they go to the discretionary.
That's right.
But under grander signs, which are over the road, as long as they're far up above the footpath, they can be permitted.
Yes.
But otherwise, discretionary.
Yeah.
Just in the clarification advice notes, we've got chapter 2 contains definitions. Is that really necessary? And chapter 2 is already listed under 31.3.1.
No, I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah. And I wonder whether the next two are actually rules rather than advice notes. They may be general rules rather than specific rules, but they are establishing standards.
Yeah, I think that you're right. They're more than advisory. They're interpretation. So they would need more standing.
And H falls into that category too, I think. funeral thing, that it is unclear from the table, just because the way they've been constructed, that it's not clear, and it probably could go into 3142, that if you breach the standards, then the consent category listed in the adjoining column applies. But there's a standard rule that, that provision that's been put in many of the other chapters, I think, just
yes.
Whoever wrote this got them to that, I suspect.
I mean, this comes up in relation to the submissions for the ski field zones, but I'm just wondering if it's clear enough. This comes under standards for signs for other areas, and it's right at the end, 12 and 13. You say that, they talk about information signs being bigger than 4 square metres or something like that. And you said, well, you can do an information sign under 31.9.12, and so you can have that in addition to the 31.9.13 signs. But I'm just wondering, is it clear enough that, for example, the square metreage of signage per site is additional to all these other signs that you're allowed? And I'm not sure if that would apply for other zones as well, because there are square meterage signs, which are sort of general, but over and above that, you could have an information sign or an event sign or whatever, as long as they comply with the relevant standards.
I've found the same.
Mm.
In reading it and, you know, obviously assessing the submissions, I've found that it isn't clear, and that's what a lot of this evidence submitted has kind of... Oh, I actually called the planner for, I think it's Go Orange, and said, oh, I'm sorry, I think I'm missing something, that's why I just wanted to call you and find out what's wrong. And he hadn't appreciated that the definition of sign and signage excluded signage that wasn't visible from a public place, and so he said, oh well, in that case, a lot of my arguments fall away. And then I think it's the same as what you're saying, is that it's not completely clear how the district-wide rules apply in terms of that. So I can work on.
Yes, I think so. And sometimes it's the relationship between the district-wide ones and the specifics for the zone. And sometimes even within the zone, like the ski area subzone, it's got two rules there, and it's not clear that you can have one or you can have both.
I think the not visible for public place, as it applies to ski area subzones, you have to be careful with Coronet Peak, because doesn't the public road go all the way up to the bottom chairs?
It does, and the definition actually says, it doesn't just say public roads, it says roads. So
yeah, the road is defined to be public.
Coronet Peak, but the other ones, I understand, are not public.
Coronet Peak, for memory, has very big signs showing you the layout of all the runs, but it's quite on the edge of the road. Just what you expect the ski field is.
Well, that's right.
Yeah,
I was going to ask about that, because that comes up a number of times in your report where respondents or submissions by saying, well, it's not visible from the road. I didn't wonder about that. Does that mean, does it apply from the road up to the road?
No, because the
Cadrona
Road is private, so it would only be if a sign was visible from down the Cadrona Valley Road in that case.
It's the same at Triple Cup.
Sorry, hang on, just signs all the way up the road to Katrina, which you can't see from Katrina, but it might be detract from the alpine environment, wouldn't it?
Yes, so it would detract from the amenity of those people within their land going skiing, I guess. But no, it's not, that wouldn't be covered.
No, I'm just thinking aloud, I just had wondered about that, whether there was a potential loophole in the plan, but how it.
Yeah, well, there is the potential for that, and given that the ski fields, some of the ski fields also have other businesses that might be of interest.
And along the way, yes, there wasn't nowhere else, so you know, the road, even summer, I mean, people would drive up to Lake Alta or something.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, it probably just, you know, may not happen, but you theoretically could then start putting up signs and say, well, you know, they're not consistent with the plan.
Yeah. No, I guess the chapter's only looking at preserving the amenity of though, you know, from outside of the site rather than inside.
When I was looking at that same submission from on the ski area subzone, one of the questions they were talking about, and it's sort of resolved for the ski area subzone because it's got 31.9.12 about information signs.
Yeah.
And now I thought to myself, well, how are other information signs provided for? I think we might have one from some community group who are wanting like placemaking signs or general information signs. And so I noticed there are rules that would cover those in relation to on or above roads and on or above cycleways and trails and those sorts of things. And so I'm not sure whether there's any other provision or even any need for any other provision for other information signs.
Mm.
I guess if they're not visible from a public place, it doesn't matter if they're internal to someone, a private wild bird, the bird life place or whatever, that's fine, it doesn't matter.
That's right. Yeah, and so they, I think in the submission they use the example of Walter Peak.
Yes.
So, yeah, so any signage within the site that wasn't visible, like the lake being a public place, obvious for that scenario, there'd be a control over that, but nothing like, within in that site. But I was also thinking about information signs like notice boards that you go up to see in town centres where people pin up flyers about the local ballet class.
Yes.
And that is not well captured by the chapter.
Like community notice board type.
Yes. Yeah.
And also, like on reserves, which are now the open space zones, so they may well not be designated in the future. When there are often lots of notices up about club activities or where to go to do what, or and yet they're not roads.
No, so they'd be captured by the discretionary, just catch-all.
Yeah, that seems
role.
Fairly excessive.
It does. I can look at whether there's scope through
some of
through
those, some
submission.
Of those submissions. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's really just information signs that might be of the nature that could go above roads or could go above cycleways or could go on a ski area subzone,
mm-hmm.
but or at the entrance to it, but actually is somewhere else,
yep.
And so I'm captured. And I was thinking about your signs to tell people to only put rain down the drain. You know, the fish, the little fish that gets sprayed on. I mean, they're usually on a road, but they may not be here. A sign. Is there an interactive warning sign? I don't know. All right, so okay. Now, I've got two more questions. You talked before about the new rules that have been brought in that talk about, that relate the signs in commercial areas to tenancies. And it's, so there's 5 square metres per tenancy or 15 square metres percentage of the ground floor area. And you mentioned some of the big tenancies and that they would have to go through a consent, probably something reasonably significant.
It will be a discretionary.
Full discretionary. So, I mean, 5 square metres is quite small for a large premises. I mean, I know even Paper Plus or whatever that books and more or whatever are talking about that, but there are much bigger premises than that.
Yeah.
I mean, do you consider that is an appropriate scale for the size of tenancies, for bigger scale tenancies particularly?
The bigger tenancies that I've been involved with obviously already require resource consent for the construction of those buildings. And so when you do the signage hand in hand,
yes,
it's not
a big deal for
me. No. And also with the discretionary activity status, yes, it does allow council the ability to look at the full range of things, but it's more, when it's talking about the scale of the sign within the building, it's more about how it fits in with the design of the building and the character of the area. So I don't find, I haven't found the discretionary activity status to be onerous.
To look at it the other way, Ms. Leith, if we look at 31X, or restrict the discretionary activity, and pass
yes.
What other matters would be relevant? I was listening as you went through, and I was checking off what you said against those matters of discretion, and I think all of them fell within those matters.
Sorry, what was the question? What's missing?
Well, if it's a full discretionary,
mm-hmm.
What other matter would you consider? What other matter would be important to consider? In other words, would those listed considerations be what is required? And could it be restricted discretion?
I have identified, just as you've asked me that question, that the matters of discretion don't include compliance with the design guidelines as the matters of control does, which I think perhaps was an oversight. But beyond that, I agree.
Include that, so if we include E from above.
So is your question that the matters of discretion in 31.8 assess everything the same as what a discretionary activity would?
Well, that just goes back to Commissioner Dawson's question. She said it's a discretionary rather a hard ask, and the list of matters that you said would be considered seem to be listed here. So my question is, could it be restricted discretionary and achieve the same outcome?
Especially when you're starting from a base of only 5 square metres.
Yeah.
Even that requires a controlled activity application.
That sounds fair. I can have a look at that in the writing reply.
My last question is about the off-site sign definition, because off-site signs are a discretionary activity, are listed as a discretionary activity. Standards particularly relating because they're discretionary anyway. So you really need to know what an off-site sign is. And I've sort of been quite a lot of words added into this definition. It used to say a sign that doesn't relate to a business at the site where the sign is located, say. But now it's got, but relates to a business within the vicinity of the sign, which is constrained, so that signage cannot be located within the site which where the business operates.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that's a huge amount of discretion gone in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's two problems. One is, how are we going to know where within the vicinity stops or ends, and how are we going to know whether the site where the business is so constrained that it can't have a sign? And even if you could interpret those things, how is a sign that is actually off-site but doesn't meet, but is far away? What is it? It's not an off-site sign anymore.
Yes,
To me, off-site signs are off-site signs, and those sorts of matters are things that you would look at as to whether or not to approve an off-site sign,
mm-hmm.
as a discretionary.
Yeah, that's right. And so, same with the corporate power schemes. It's something
yeah.
jumped out of yesterday. And so, yeah, where I got to was that it would be more practical to put those in a standard rather than within the definition.
Well, I think even as a standard, they wouldn't stack up. They'd have to be an assessment, or policy or something, because you don't have assessment letters for them, because it's a full discretionary. And it's funny because, if it's full discretionary to be an off-site sign, and if you're an off-site sign in inverted commas,
mm-hmm.
but you're far away from the site of the business, like say that's Real Journeys advertising Waitomo Glow Rooms or something, so you probably could all agree it's not in the vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're not provided for, so you're still a discretionary.
Yeah.
It's you're better off just saying all off-site signs are discretionary, and then look at this as part of.
Well, it could go as an assessment
matter.
Because we've got general ones.
There are general assessment matters.
Yes.
Yes, it could go in those general assessment matters, but they're not there already.
Just further to that, when I read your evidence in chief, was the what you were trying to achieve, as I understood it, was to differentiate between some guy that has a business up a side road and an off-site sign, and billboards on the other, which generally would be off-site signs, and which basically the formal was seen as acceptable, because billboards that just advertise anything, any particular product without any relationship. That's what you were trying to do, wasn't it?
That's
the
right.
Objective of the exercise.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So, that's right. So.
Yeah,
so it's quite difficult to differentiate an off-site sign that's miles away from a billboard. A billboard is
a billboard.
It's got to be brand or something.
Brand awareness.
Brand awareness. That's right.
That is distinct from
a business.
A business which is
has a
500 metres away.
Yeah,
or even 500 kilometres away.
Yeah.
So I think that's the difference, really, is that an off-site sign is a sign that's advertising a business, a service,
mm-hmm.
or something that actually happens on a site that's not the same site as the sign, whereas a billboard is advertising a brand.
Yeah, that's where I've tried to get.
Mm. That's fine.
Yeah.
But we've now got this gap for off-site signs that are advertising businesses and services that are not in the vicinity,
mm-hmm.
But far away. And I think that's just starting to complicate things.
Yes.
That's all my questions. Thank you very much.
I'll just look at this again. There's a moving sign, and include a digital signs according to Law 3179 as a moving sign. Doesn't that poor practice for a definition to depend on the status of a law somewhere else, which is relying on the definition?
Yeah,
say it's a moving sign. And if you want a different definition of digital sign, then perhaps you need to have a different definition of digital sign.
Well, I guess I don't see digital signs as being moving signs, taking into account the requirements of that standard, being that it has to, it can appear and then it has to dissolve and a new one comes up. So I guess I don't call that moving, but, and so that was more for advice that a digital sign is, in accordance with that standard, is not to be classified as moving.
Do you remember the sign that used to be above Arthur Barnes in George Street?
Yes. My friend's grandfather made that sign.
Is that a moving sign?
With the horse?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I'd call that a moving sign.
Yeah, so that was a digital sign because it was lights turning on and off and effectively created the illusion of movement.
It wasn't actually any parts that moved. No,
there's only neon lights turned on and off.
Or could that be a
flashing
sign?
Well, that's right. And so that's, I think if you have to be very more careful with the definitions than the rules on this sort of thing.
Science are online.
Yes.
And
a digital sign is I'm not sure there's such a thing as a digital sign, actually.
There could be.
Or
if you actually had a sign, let's say the cinema that was advertised, a trailer.
Or it said 1, 2, that's digital, 3, 4, those are digits. Pixelated might be the appropriate word. Because that's what we're talking about, where a number of pixels change colours and turn on and off.
Well,
in a way, as long as
it meets
37179,
that's a digital sign.
Just a comment again from that. From reading your viewers and chief, I understand you're not, as far as like, mainly in the context of billboards, but you don't see any reason to differentiate between digital signs and just static billboards. A digital sign has not a more adverse effect on the environment than a static sign of the same size.
No, I haven't differentiated those two types. I guess I've considered them all as one.
So I asked that question because I know that one particular large council digital signs as an incandescent with rage.
It's obviously not this one.
So a billboard that's purely for just advertising a brand can be either a static sign or a electronic sign, a digital
pixelated
sign. Pixelated sign. Which can change but not move. And it can be any size, really, to be called a billboard.
yes. Yeah.
Yes, can. I mean, you then have controls over it, but to be called a billboard, it's any size, pixelated or straight.
It could be a small pixelated sign or a giant static sign.
Yeah.
And the difficulty then is distinguishing it from off-site signs.
We have a couple of submissions relating to the, just going to the dark side for a minute, relating to billboards and whether they should be provided for or not. And you've said you considered those and said that they should not be provided for. And in fact, they've been bumped from non-complying up to prohibited. You explain to us why that is. But to explore that a little bit further, have you considered the possibility of limited provision for billboards, say in industrial or town centre type locations, like on where it fits within the profile of a building, like a blank wall, for example, might be an otherwise blank concrete wall. To perhaps give an example, if you were the viewer, and this is a blank concrete wall building, an industrial area, and that's your billboard on there, one assessment matter could be whether what the remarkable is the backdrop. If you have, that might be a finding consent. But if it's just simply a blank wall, is there a place for billboards in those circumstances? If you have an airport zone, perhaps, or industrial zones?
Yes, so they... dealing with the airport first, the airport zone chapter has specific sign rules in it, and my reading of those means that a billboard would probably occur in that zone, or it's not within 20 metres of the zone boundary, and there's a couple of other
things. Yeah, I want to clarify that. Yes,
yeah, and then thinking about the industrial zones in Queenstown and Wanaka, in particular Galena Drive, where I was down there yesterday, that is, in my opinion, totally saturated with signage, and I don't think that a billboard sign would just add to that like cumulatively. And same with the likes of Reese Crescent and Wanaka, Valentine Road, the signage is already quite a significant component. And then moving to the town centres, as previously said, there's parts of the town centres which I think are already probably at its limit for signage that is already there, and the cumulative effects of the permitted standard of signage as well as potentially these billboard signs, I think that there would potentially need to be a re-look at the permitted signage standards.
I'm taking from your answer, what you're concerned about is the potential for these signs to contribute to a situation where there's already a lot of signage, rather than the character of the sign themselves.
That's exactly right. And I think it's I just think it's the cumulative effect that can come about as a result of those signs, in addition to all of the other signs. Not that they're just specifically for brand awareness, but the businesses within the area should be able to advertise their brand. But then all of a sudden, on top of that, we've got, for example, McDonald's.
If it's a digital, we might advertise, say, Air New Zealand 1 minute, Spades Beer the next, that kind of thing. I just want to explore that with you and read the book. It's an interesting response, because often it's a hostility. Right word, but it's more about the inherent nature of billboards, which a number of councils establish as the primary concern rather than anything else. But thank you. There was some discussion earlier on about the objectives, as with our readers' objectives or policies. I think you've got a suggestion, might go away and look at that. I'm just looking at 31.2.1, which are on page 31.2 of the text. That's almost like an introductory objective. What I've distilled from the rules and provisions as a whole is that there's a distinct emphasis on the importance of signage as it may affect the character of this district rather than just signage generally. In other words, the scenic character of the district. And I'm wondering, at the moment, it does seem a little lacking in horsepower, if I can put it that way. And also words like signs are managed to assist with maintaining appropriate levels, and the sort of things that applicants' lawyers love, because they can be interpreted almost any way you like. I'm wondering whether what you're trying to say is something like this: signage which is of an extent and scale which is consistent with maintaining the scenic character of the district, or something like that. That's a very off the top of my head, but I'm wondering whether something of that nature might be a good way to introduce the objectives. It seems to be where you're heading. I might be wrong about that, but moment it does seem rather lacking in focus.
That's fair. The policy directly under that seems to just about reiterate what the objective says. So, yeah, I think some guidance from the objective along those lines.
That was almost working backwards from what the rules and things are saying. 31.2.1.5, you've got a wording change you're promoting there regarding the establishment of information direction signs. Is it deliberate that that be confined to knowledge of public access to public spaces, but also be private spaces? Is that a deliberate wording choice?
Well, that was on the back of the submissions about public trails, and I've forgotten what the other submission was, but which were concentrating on public trails. But yeah, I think that signage definitely has a role to play in terms of directing people to private.
I'm not trying to word from now, but I just wonder whether that was a conscious decision to do that.
One of this. Is it the knowledge of the public access that someone is seeking? And I've had a couple of trail applications, not domestic, but where they want signage to show information about highlights along the trail as part of it. Was that part of the intention as well with the submission?
Yeah, that's right.
Because that's not picked up by that. That's...
No, it's not picked up by this one. I think that 31.2.1.7, which also includes signs necessary for directing public information, that could cover that.
But that's just noting the location and purpose, whereas this one, 5, is about supporting the establishment.
Next, I was just going to ask, this relates to 31.5.18, which is a bugbear of councils, what the statement deals, relating to signage on any stationary sign, written trailer or vehicle, or any sign attached to a stationary trailer or vehicle. My first question with that one is, can you actually regulate that? Because my understanding is you park a trailer on the side of the road and it's legally parked. There's not a lot you could do, because technically speaking, if you look at the B, as you'll be aware, many vehicles in this district have parked with advertising on them, as new business or A1 electrician or whatever it be. So technically speaking, under B, I'm just wondering if the rule would apply to someone who parked their vehicle with their advertising on it on the side of the road for half a day. They could theoretically be a breach of the rule. But I'm just wondering whether you've looked into the legalities of that.
No, I haven't. But I did notice that the first sentence was where they're located, so to be visible from any road or public place for the purpose of advertising. So that's rather subjective. But there was a while there that there was something like the Fair Factory or something had a car up just under the gondola every day, just all past it, and it was obviously trying to entice people that are walking up to the gondola. So I guess that's perhaps how council was trying to address that, but no, I haven't looked into the...
No, I just raised that point, because I know that Christchurch City Council some years ago looked at it and used to infuriate them, the people who try and beat the rules. They just park a registered trailer on the side of the road with like a big sandwich with basically sitting on the deck.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what they were doing. But just like word checking whether you can do that.
No. I was thinking of someone else in one.
Yeah.
Not mentioning names.
No comment. It's not me, by the way. But no comment.
Is this your new mind?
No, just a clarification.
I just one final point. I noticed that the Wanaka books and toys, I've encountered this several times. From your answer, I understand what you said is that it's a case of not reading on, and that that when you're reading the signs rules, you need to read 31.6 to 31.9 together. Mm-hmm. Because it appears what you've said is I've missed a rule later on that says if you've got a sign which is approved and you want to replace it, you can do that without a resource consent. That seemed to be their concern, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And you basically said, well, that isn't a problem because if you look further on, you can do that.
Can we start with appropriate being inappropriate? 31.2.1, and Commissioner Next has already pointed out the enhancing appropriate levels of access. I personally have a little bugbear about the term appropriate, because three of the commissioners live in Albert Town, and which is a market, and potentially the airport's about to get international flights. And James Helmore, who's the chief executive of Blackwater Tourism, may consider 50 flights a day as an appropriate level of flights into the airport, whereas the three commissioners that live underneath the flight path might dispute that. So, just appropriate to me is no one of the lawyers smiling.
Did you say that?
On page 34 of the evidence in chief, you, as a submitter who one of the signs who seek clarification of the interpretive diagram, which is 31.13.7.2, and I was wondering, I've only just started to use glasses, but I found the box that has been replacing the one that's been struck out. I couldn't read it. So I was struggling with the interpretation myself.
Do you want me to read it?
Well, I'd like us to do it in the same font that the other one is in.
Yes, so it was only really for differentiation, just to try and make it clear that one's getting replaced and one's not. But obviously when the final version gets released by the panel, you can do what you like with the colour.
Thank you. And did you have any comment on the fact that the calculation is a little confusing? So that ended up with you putting in the other comment, I believe.
Yeah, I've seen the existing operative diagram, which is similar, used in some strange ways. And so that's why I've tried to make it as clear as possible. But if you think of there needs to be additional clarity, definitely open to ideas.
Yep. That'd be good. We'll go into the corporate colour schemes again. I'm assuming that we'll have a look at that. Could you expand on in 14.8 in your evidence in chief on 42 what you mean by it's not entirely clear that signage captured by rule 31.520 is permitted by chapter 31? Because I reckon 31.520 has been permitted.
No, it was more to do with, and I think this is when also raised by Commissioner Dawson, was that it's not abundantly clear how the rules interrelate, I guess, between the district-wide chapter and the zones, but also kind of within themselves, within the tables. So I guess a question could be raised where you would have a sign that's required by legislation, but it might be located in the rural zone and might be exceed 2 square metres, and whether that would still be permitted under 31.5.20, or whether it would need consent under the zone rule, which specifies the size of the sign. Yeah, that's where my comment was coming from. But yeah, it's something that I'll have a look at in terms of the interaction between all of those tables and rules.
When you're doing that, can you have a look at 31.5.2 as well? Because that, in other chapters, that provision has been one of the general matters that's rather than an activity rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
With 31.6.5 and temporary sale signs, where we have one sign per temporary sale, then 14 days, then another sign per temporary sale. I think at the start of this, one of your comments was that we know. I'll paraphrase, but the gist of it was no one really cares about the signage policy anyway. The district seems to almost make up its own rules in terms of the signage. I'm just paraphrasing. But wouldn't this be another one of those? In that if we're actually going to make a rule or a standard, which is a rule, how is that possibly going to be enforced?
I would expect that it would only be enforced by the council when it was actually a problem. I don't expect that it'll be something that the council's compliance department monitor every day.
So
it'll be complaint.
When would it be a problem?
When would it ever be a problem? So
there's two signs saying sale.
It's really just when they're up there all year round.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Like so, a warehouse that's just permanent sale.
Like Briscoe's Lady every week.
Yeah, rug shops, they have continuous sales. It's to stop someone saying, okay, I've got my permitted level of signage, but I can also do sale signage and, adding on.
So effectively, it's waiting for a complaint.
Yeah, it's only if there's a complaint.
And your changes have been in response to, well, it used to say you can only have 4 sales a year,
mm-hmm.
and now you're saying, well, the number is not, it's just the continuousness of it.
Yeah.
So you've made this 14-day break.
Yeah, I find that in terms of compliance, purposes of compliance, it's really hard to monitor something across a year, whereas it would be more easy to look at, a 2-week period, for example. That's the reason why I put it in there.
Mm-hmm. Just on the basis of what you said, though, why is being necessary?
I think that one is quite onerous in some respects. I voted on the scope to change it. I didn't think I did. I can go back and have a look and see whether I do.
Well, the problem is, you see,
one per window.
Yes, well, with there only being one, then that's going to push almost everyone having a sale into a discretionary activity, which I don't think is what the council intends.
Yeah, and using the books and toys example for paper plus to monitor, you've got, I think, 4 window displays, and you'd expect to see a sale banner on each of those windows, and that wouldn't be Oh yeah, I'll have a look at the new scope.
Thank you. Going on to Go Orange et al., who had a submission about water-based signage. And I think they were looking at different wording in terms of eliminating rolling network as a wording on, is it 312.2? And I was just wondering, one of your statements were, since you said, I can't think of a situation where signage may affect the safety of users of the water transport network, which is on 26.4 in the urban institute. A 5-knot buoy, which encourages craft to slow to 5 knots within 2 meters of the shore. And I was just wondering if you are emotionally attached to using a loading network, or if you could use some sort of discussion about transport network.
Yes, so I have changed some, but perhaps not all. Of roading network to a transport network, I've got no problem with that.
We're trying to work out what the relationship between 31.5.15 and 31.7.9 is. Because it seems to me that
So
if that's the intention, maybe rather than dealing referring to it being not being moving the sign, maybe 31.15 should just accept where
it
meets the standard in 31.97 may be the answer, because potentially all of those things could happen on the digital sign, it could be flashing.
Well, I think you're better off to accept 31.79 as the chairman just said, from your prohibited rule,
yes.
Rather than trying to do it within the definitions or by advice notes,
because
you get the knots, whereas this just says, well, if you meet that one, you're not in this one.
Yeah,
that sounds like it would work better.
Well, and you might have to find if you don't comply with 3179A2F. Where do you
the interesting thing is, that's the other question I had about that now. I've written it down and I've forgotten what I meant. What happens if you don't comply with those? Because normally the column says what you are if you don't comply, and the column says that you're permitted.
Yeah, so that's what this these columns all say what you are if you do comply, and
yes.
Normally. And then there's like 3177 talks about signs that don't comply with 1 to 6 above,
yeah.
But it doesn't tell you what happens with 3179.
No.
Oh, okay.
And it may be that also that you might need to prohibited in a local shopping centre of business mixed use zone rather than not applicable.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very old construction.
The formulation is, yes.
It's very complex.
It's almost as bad as the other district attorney. That's what we're trying to move from that.
Yeah, well, I found...
You don't have to tell us who the author was.
No, I won't. wasn't me. I've had cause to look at the notified version a few times. For people looking to do large developments, and they want to know about the signage, and I found it quite tricky. So yeah, it could be clearer.
Is it, in this case, what I asked at the very beginning, is it actually the latter chapter very similar to the existing chapter 4 under the Upfield District Plan?
It is.
Page 48.
Yeah, it is very similar.
So that may be part of the problem.
Yeah.
So it might be then that your task might be to try to make it, instead of an offence-based chapter, which the operative district plan is, make it into an activity-based chapter, more like the remainder of the leading thing. But certainly it would only be, you wouldn't actually be changing the status of anything. Rearrangement, but that might help.
Yeah.
But you might have might be more easily understood and comprehended.
Mm-hmm.
And that might answer a lot of the submissions that we had as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I can remember
that. Also bearing away the fact that you the comments that you made about it, essentially you're relying on a lead person reading this as opposed to relying from it as a technical.
Mm-hmm.
Because the technical interpretation of the comments that come up with this bit above the way I would look at this.
Yeah, and there's, I think signage is one of those things that make people want to access more than a lot of the other chapters.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's important to make it as clear as
possible. No further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
10:30 tomorrow morning.